So there's always like 10 minutes, and I take out like 20 seconds.
Okay. What's the best cheese for the cheese tax? What do dogs really want?
Is it a Parmesan was fine.
Yeah, like a good hard cheese.
They like most cheeses, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
The worst, cheese that you can get from Kroger, whatever shredded, that's what they really like.
Yeah, they like that you can like
the stuff that I use every day. Yeah.
That's the stuff I really like too, because that's how you get your dog to eat actual food.
The Mexican shredded mix that I use for everything. Yep. Yeah,
that is the universal house cheese. It doesn't matter if you work in cheese or not. The Mexican shredded mix from Kroger is the cheese you use for everything.
Yeah. It's like the high life of cheese.
Yeah, it is 100%.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Kentucky Commons Radio Hour. I am Michael Moeller, joined tonight by John Renane.
Hello.
David Satterley. We are at Brewgrass Homebrew Supply here in Louisville, Kentucky. Our guest tonight is Adam Steckler, the roaming cheesemonger and owner of Steckler Specialties. Adam, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
We're going to be talking about a lot of cheese tonight, but we're opening the show the same way that we always open the show, with a special beer. We like to rotate between the three of us, between John, David, and I, of something to bring, whether it be special or not. And tonight, it was my turn, so I decided to bring this beer that Tristan Chan from PorchDrinking.com gave to me a while ago, actually, when he was still at Ratio Beerworks at a in Denver, Colorado. It was a 2019 bourbon barrel-aged Russian Imperial Stout from Ratio.
Holy smokes.
This is one of the first beers I think that Ratio ever made. It's an 11.5% Imperial Stout. A lot of specialty grains, a lot of a molasses. It was brewed, I guess, on their 20-barrel system when they got that involved when they launched in 2015. And the very first batch that they made immediately went into bourbon barrels and aged for about a year. And this is the case of a beer that I probably should have drank sooner.
Perfect time to drink it today.
But yeah, it's been 4 years, so why not open it and share it?
Hell yeah.
David, you want to describe that label for me, though?
This is a wizard. His third eye is open. He has a nice little pointy hat, but not like the white pointy hats that we don't like. He's centered in front of a intergalactic body, maybe the moon. I don't know. It does say genius wizard and like some King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard text. I do like it. Big gray beard. Actually, I kind of want this beard when I get older. It's sprawling.
Yeah, easy. That's some like evil Gandalf stuff.
His name was Sauron.
Saruman.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. This is from Denver. Love visiting there. Got to go to Ratio last year, so let's give this a go.
Heck yeah.
And Adam, have you frequented in Denver?
I went 4 years ago for the Great American Beer Fest.
Ooh, nice.
We happened to be in at the same time. Did not go to the Great American Beer Fest, but we did go to the Great Mexican Beer Fest that had Mexican wrestling in the street.
Excuse me?
It was quite the experience. Yes. They had a lot of, and it, now that I'm put on the spot, I wish I could remember some of the breweries that were there, but there were quite a few Mexican craft breweries that were doing a pop-up that same weekend. It's really more my speed than the Great American Beer Fest.
I don't know of many Mexican craft breweries. I would love to explore that more.
It was good. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of very, very light, crisp beers. A lot of stuff that reminded me of, I don't know if you're familiar with the Colomecas stuff, but very, very crisp lagers and nice. Super delicious. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
We were there coincidentally for Great American Beer Fest as well. I lost my beloved Nalgene on the train from the airport.
Something you can never get back.
And so many lost stickers.
So many.
Yeah, stickers. Yeah, exactly.
And we didn't go to the Mexican Beer Festival, which honestly you would have maybe done that one of the days, but we did go to Bierstadt, and they had like amateur wrestling going on in there.
Yeah.
So
big wrestling.
Not as good as OVW here in Louisville, High Valley Wrestling, but that was pretty good from what we saw of it up there in the upper lounge area. I really enjoy going to Ratio there in the Rhino neighborhood of Denver whenever I go. It's always kind of fun. They have this one beer called King of Carrots. It's a carrot saison, I believe I remember. That's always a fun one.
It's named after a Neutral Milk Hotel song. King of Carrot Flowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Neutral what now?
Neutral Milk Hotel.
No. Oh, okay.
It's like my favorite band.
Are you familiar with that? Is somebody
I've seen Garden
somebody's
State.
Somebody's got to be a hipster at this table.
I'm familiar. I'm a closeted hipster. I know most things, and I just go, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Just smile and nod.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the beer's great. It's very rich, very robust. I don't think it's too old. I think it tastes fun. I think it tastes amazing.
It smells like a bourbon barrel right off the bat.
Very rich, very well rounded. Kind of like a dark cacao, kind of deep, crispy, crunchy coffee kind of thing coming through. I like it.
Yeah, roasty and dry, but there's a lot of barrel punch on it.
A lot of barrel. It tastes like a bourbon ball.
Almost. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Porch Drinking.
Yeah. Thank you, Porch Drinking. Thank you, Tristan. Sorry it took me so long to drink it. If you are interested in seeing what this beer looks like, you can, of course, check out our YouTube page, youtube.com/@LouisvilleIleTrail. It's a really weird way that YouTube does that, right? It's a weird URL.
Yeah. I think they intentionally make it hard to tag on non-YouTube associated platforms.
Yeah, it's hard to link to. But regardless, go check us out. Subscribe, rate, listen, share, do all those things. If you want to figure out a way to help us that's not in a monetization way, that's the best way to do it. But if you do feel like tipping us a few bucks, you can always do that at patreon.com/kycommons.
I'm going to throw out an extra request for just this week, and maybe in a couple weeks. But if you're listening to this and you're a brewery owner, or your brewery in your backyard has a Kentucky Common, get in them DMs.
We'd
love to try that from you.
Just let us know. We'll organize the logistics. Anyway, I can't talk anymore either.
Yeah, absolutely. We do have Adam Steckler here this evening. Adam, tell us a little bit about yourself and the world that you live in.
Well, I have been a cheesemonger for about the last 10 years. I'm currently an ACS certified cheese professional.
For those who aren't in the game, should we define cheesemonger for the people?
Cheesemonger is basically just one who buys and sells cheese, works in cheese. I think it's a very loose term and it can mean whatever you want, but you have to work in cheese. That's kind of what my business is cheese. And currently I have my own business. I find that I don't really necessarily enjoy doing it all the time. I've been working in retail for that sounds terrible. I love what I do.
Yeah, dude, I love what I do.
I love what I do. But
hey, that's honest.
I've worked in retail for about the last 10 years and just at that stage of burnout where you say like, okay, well, what's next? What are we doing next? Like, what's the new thing? So working a bunch of different jobs and trying to figure out what we're doing next, doing pairings around town, which is super fun. Just trying not to overdo it at the moment. But it also makes me kind of step back a little bit and really appreciate what I do and why I do it. Spend a little bit more time going out to the farms that I source products from and talking to cheesemakers and just kind of seeing what their struggles are like and how, you know, as a person that's in this business, how I can help move things along and help their business evolve. I think that a lot of people don't realize that cheese producers have a really hard time actually getting their products to the appropriate consumers, just because they are farm-based workers. A lot of them work 20 hours a day sometimes. It's a very, very strenuous job, and it's like that's the last thing on their mind is how do we get to the city to sell this product to city folk who are going to be the people with the money that have the ability to buy these products.
I think I interrupted you talking about a cheese certification. Can you tell us about what that is? What do you
the ACS is the American Cheese Society.
Amazing.
Yes, it's a great time. And every year, once a year, they open up their testing. They basically give you a long test, cost of few $100s, and it's wherever their conference is for the year. So last year I went out to Portland, Oregon, Took the test for the second time because the first time I thought I was ready, and that was not true. but yes.
Eating a lot of cheese since then.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, reading up on things, you know, I think a really big facet of cheese is that much like brewing, there's a lot of chemistry involved. There's a lot of moving parts involved. And the whole process is much bigger than you probably think of the store. You just go, oh, we just go to the store and we buy this cheddar and it's great. But there's so much more to it and there's so much story to it. And that's really what I spent the last few years trying to learn about.
Yeah. Like if you want to do a brewing certification that's not specific to brewing, like say like a Cicerone, say you're a server, you want to become Cicerone certified, you do have to delve into that aspect of, yeah, like this is how it's made and this is also what it pairs with and this is also how you judge it. And like it sounds like for your certification you did have to cover a lot of that ground as well.
It's a lot of where things come from, why they come from these regions, what is special about the making, you know. You learn about what type of fields different animals graze in at different times of the year to make certain cheeses. You learn about the chemical structures of a lot of cheeses. You learn about bacterias and molds, and it's really a super, super interesting career to be in. And I think back to what we were talking about earlier with feeling burnout is when you start to get to the point where you're like, well, I don't feel that way about it. I just feel like I'm working nonstop to like make cheese boards or to make a grilled cheese sandwich or do whatever I'm doing. And I stop thinking about like why I'm doing the things that I'm doing. You just have to step back a little bit and say, okay, like I need to appreciate this again. I really have to be able to take this in. And this is kind of what's fun about doing these and doing pairing events now is that I get to sit down with people. We get to try things. We get to talk about things. We get to talk about cool products and where they come from and why they exist. And it makes you kind of realize that like what I do is really fun and it's super awesome, but maybe I don't need to do it in the manner that I was doing it in for so long.
So why cheese and what made you get into it?
I've always liked food. And I really got a love for cheese, especially when I was like my first job ever. I worked for Tony Boomba's Pizza.
Nice.
16 years old. And then I jumped from pizza place to pizza place, always in the same company. And it was just one of those things. It was the first place I had ever had like Gorgonzola. It was the first place I'd ever had Fontina. And there was just all these new flavors. I was like, this is wild. This is really cool. And growing up, my father grew up on a dairy farm adjacent. Cool. And you kind of grow to appreciate the plight of the dairy farmer, if you will. And I think what was a really big influence to all of this was looking at Kenny's farmhouse down in Austin, Kentucky. He was a dairy farmer looking for ways to, you know, improve his business, make more money, traveled around Europe, learned a lot about cheese and cheese making and how you can take a product that doesn't really sell for much and turn it on its head and make something new and worthwhile. And I just think it's a super interesting business. It kind of makes me feel, I meet a lot of farmers that make me feel that sense of nostalgia when you're a kid and you have family that works on a farm or they have farm property and it's a whole different style of life. I don't know. It's just something that I feel like I can do inside the city that feels comfortable and it feels warm.
Mm-hmm. In like a nice brie or like
it's a nice brie. Exactly.
Well, we are very grateful that you're here today.
All right. Well, we're going to eat a lot of cheese too. So,
yeah. So I'll tell you that cheese has always fascinated me, especially since COVID. I decided like everybody else to take up all these new hobbies, during COVID. And one of those was, going into Kroger, checking out the little cheese section there, and like the manager's special wooden basket. Mm-hmm. Just like, what cheese have I not had before in my life? And I'd grab something new every time, just sit down at my house and have a concentrated effort of just like, let me actually try to taste this like I taste through beer or spirits. Mm-hmm. And that's really fun to do, and it's also really hard to do if you're not used to it.
Yeah. Well, it I still find that to be super fun and interesting. Going into a cheese shop that I haven't ever been into before and just picking up something that's unfamiliar to me and saying like, oh, I've heard about this. It's just fun.
Yeah. And Kroger's like up their game over the years. I remember like that didn't exist maybe 5-6 years ago, but about a year ago, Michael and I were up in Madison, Wisconsin for Great Taste of the Midwest. And we have a buddy that's from there. Hello, Nathan Maleski. That sent us to a shop called For Imagination, renowned cheese shop in Madison, I guess. And they only source Wisconsin products. It was like two kids in a candy store, but also we had no idea what candy was.
Yeah. More like two middle-aged people in a cheese store, if you're being honest.
So like we walk in and it's, I assume they're used to this, but we're just standing there like, what the fuck do we do? Like, and finally,
I don't even know protocol. Like,
yeah. And I mean, without even like raising a hand, this, very friendly worker comes over and is like, you guys need help. Like, yeah, we do.
I can show you cheese.
Yeah, she took us through a small tasting and we ended up spending probably entirely too much money there.
But that was what I was going to say. You're talking about like, finding new ways to kind of turn something that's made out of cows into like these really refined products. Cheese is one of the things I would honestly say even more so than beer that I'm almost completely price indifferent to. Like, yeah. I'll spend $20 on like a thing of cheese and I'll be like, nickel and diming bananas or whatever.
But absolutely.
Is that an increasing trend or do you find that true among consumers?
Yes and no, but I like, we were talking about it earlier, like we all have our daily drivers and it's like,
what's the high life of cheese?
Yeah, the Mexican shredded cheese. Yeah. That's like the high life of cheese.
Purple bag.
Yeah, it always hangs around your house and it's fine. And it's not, it's a lot of cellulose and it's not necessarily cheese, but like that's the daily driver. And then, there is things that are much nicer. Like, I use New York sharp cheddar if I'm making pimento cheese because I want something that really pops and I want a ton of flavor. If you're really trying to find flavor, then maybe the store brand like shredded cheese isn't what you're looking for. I spend way too much money on beer and I spend way too much money on cheese.
Well, there are worse things to spend money on.
Well, what do you mean that like the Mexican shredded cheese at Kroger is like the cellulose of cheese?
Oh, I mean,
is cellulose rather.
So a lot of the cheeses that you'll find in a grocery store, they use cellulose or like, so it's like a wood powder or like a fiber powder that is put on the outside of cheese. And that's what keeps it from sticking together. Mm-hmm. There's a big uproar about this probably 4 or 5 years ago about shaker Parmesan.
I was going to add, that was one of my questions in the back of my head. Is that cheese?
No. So what there's, is that, there's man? A lot of cellulose in that. Okay. And that was kind
and
of
that's
what,
just like plant fiber kind of, right?
Yeah. It's like a wood fiber, but that's what keeps everything from sticking together and turning into a
kinda
ball.
Like corn starchish or whatever. It just kind of does that job.
Kind of keeps everything separated.
Okay.
I will say in that same visit to the cheese shop that David and I have visited in Madison, I also picked up a little book that I've become a little obsessed with called Cheese, Sex, and Death.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A Bible for the Cheese Obsessed by Erica Kubik. And apparently she's like really well known in that world.
Yeah. She's awesome. I actually got to meet her at the last conference we went to.
There are cheese conferences.
The cheese conference is cool. This year it's in Des Moines.
Well, that's a horse.
Bro, what the fuck else do you need? You got infinite cheese.
But I guess the upside of that too is it's like a driving distance thing. But I am from the Midwest, so
no, that's fine.
Portland, Oregon's also driving distance, whatever.
You drove to Portland?
No, I never flew.
Bold.
Yeah, but she's awesome. She does fantastic work. She makes beautiful displays, and she's great at selling products. She's awesome.
I just keep paralleling like beer to cheese at this point in the conversation where there's an intense commoditization of beer and cheese that it's probably, like there's adjuncts that are in, you know, store-bought beer, but, you know, it passes off. The Mexican blend, you know, tastes fine, does the job, you know, everything else. But the actual craft cheese has, you know, it seems like it has this niche and people that really love it.
It's a lot harder to get into, and it's a lot harder to, like, I think beer kind of sells itself because you have so many reasons that people go after beer. It's like, I like to drink beer because I just need it. It's my medicine. Mm-hmm. It's Papa's medicine. But with cheese, it's really like, there's something about it that's like, gives you this sense of being a little bit bougie. Like, it's nice to have like a cheese and wine night. And like, it's not something that I want to do all the time, but it's just something that you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. we're going to really splurge on ourselves. We're going to take care of ourselves tonight.
Cheese is like a great snack too, honestly. It just, something to have like in the middle of the day. It's just
I agree.
I had a little piece of pepper jack for lunch today.
Like, come on, I'll fuck with some cheese anytime. That kind of back to your story. So you said you got started up just working in restaurants and discovering new flavors and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
Talk us through just a little bit more briefly of just kind of how you got to the point where, I mean, I don't think I know anyone who knows more about cheese than you. You might be like the Louisville cheese expert.
I mean, there's definitely people that know way
more. At least in my radar.
But no, it's just, you know, if you want to do something and you want to, like, there's not a lot of competition for it. But it's really just became a thing where I was good at it. I really like selling stuff too. And it's like, when you work inside of something where you get to push products, it's much like bartenders. There's bartenders that go to work and they sling drinks. And then there's bartenders that like take a lot of pride in like what they're serving and where it's coming from. And like, you know, I think it's kind of the same idea. Like, I worked at Whole Foods for 5 years, I guess it was.
A lot of good people in Louisville came out of that, your generation of the Whole Foods folks.
Yeah, I
Buddy was there then. Stephanie Courtney was there. Like,
so Chris Buddy's Johnson. Buddy's probably still one of my favorite people to cross paths with.
Yeah,
we would do a lot of beer and cheese pairings with Monic. And,
yeah,
and it's awesome. And you'll find, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but you'll find that Monic does kind of circle back around into cheese a couple times too. And we're gonna try some. Yeah, Whole Foods really kind of cemented the love for it right before it was bought out by Amazon.
Yeah.
which, you know, things change.
Things change.
Everything evolves. But I got really into specialty goods in general. I was a cheese buyer. I was a coffee buyer. Worked closely with beer. I was never the buyer of that. But, you know, that was kind of the department we worked in.
That was Chris Johnson was around that time too, wasn't he?
Yeah, Luke Bruner.
Luke is there. Yeah, Luke was there. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a lot of good people.
But were you there when Top Chef came in?
No. So a lot of that too, I think that was Louisville and Lexington. That was right around the time that the new Lexington store had opened.
Yeah.
And I helped them open that place up. And it was interesting. But I got to miss all those days. So I was doing, I was normally gone by about 1 in the afternoon. So I would come in, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning and unload boxes and get out before the day really started.
Courtney has a good story about meeting a Nicolas Cage at Whole Foods when she worked there. Mm. He came in while he was working on a movie. So he's very normal. Very normal guy.
He seems like a very normal guy. When you think of that Nicolas Cage, you think, wow, that guy's a really average, normal guy.
That's a very average, normal guy.
So I feel like you hear, like, everybody says that they like cheese, and even some people, especially in internet culture, they're just like, I love cheese. But I also feel like the knowledge of cheese does not match the enthusiasm of cheese. So, like, what is that next step that somebody's like really interested in learning more about? What do they do? What resources would you recommend?
Don't ever think that you're going to make any money. And just do it.
I mean, it's a passion.
It's 100% a passion job. I think I'm almost 40 now, but it's like, I think that finally at this point, I've kind of accepted that, like, it's not something that I'm going to necessarily ever make a lot of money on, and that's okay. But it's just something I like. and if you like something, you should approach it and
you should let it go.
It. You should let it go, and then you should come back to it.
It's kind of like this podcast.
Yes. So, I think that's the big thing. You know, if you really want to learn more about it, invest your time and put effort into it. There's a lot of resources that you can use online. There's a lot of cheese making classes. Unfortunately, there's not a lot in Louisville. But Indianapolis, there's a ton of cheese making classes with a company called Tulip Tree Creamery. Go to pairings, learn things, just be curious. That's a lot of it. There's so much information that I still get on the day to day by just using the internet.
Even before COVID, and this is true today, I still have a little tab in my browser bookmark section for a website called the International Cheese Academy.
Yeah, you know.
And that's a certification that I've been like eyeing for 4 years now, and I just haven't done it because...
Just take it. It's not that difficult of a test.
From a consumer standpoint, like if there's listeners here in Louisville who are just kind of... I think what you were saying was resonating with me because it's almost like a meme. It's like, I love cheese. Like guys are like, I love bacon, and girls are like... Put me in a room with some cheese and I don't need no man or like whatever. Is that a meme?
I've never seen that. I don't
think that's a meme. I think maybe that's a meme after
maybe
today.
That was a dream I had actually. But from a consumer standpoint, do you have any places around town you'd recommend as like a good cheese spots kind of akin to what you guys were talking that you found up in Wisconsin?
Let me set the stage.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like Thursday. You've been working your tail off.
All right. Talk slower.
You're ready to just like... Just go out and just relax a little bit, and you walk in, you sit down, and you're like, give me the Fontina. No, you're out. Okay.
Beer, cheese mongrel?
I need extra sharp cheddar. I guess.
I mean, I don't really know that there's a right or wrong answer to that. It's really about what you're looking for. Again, Kroger is awesome, but really the reason Kroger is awesome now is because of their acquisition of Murray's mm-hmm. cheese. That's done a ton for them.
I forgot about that.
Whole Foods is still awesome. Just it drives me crazy to no end. It's like, you know, I remember there used to be this real culture at Whole Foods. It's like, what can we get for you? Mm-hmm. What can we let you try? And that's really how you get people engaged with what you're doing. And I feel like there's not really much of that anymore. I can't tell you how often I go in there and I'm like just dead eyed on things, and I can always find something for myself. But I also know what I'm looking for or not looking for.
Do you do the Ron Swanson thing in Home Depot?
I know more than you.
No. Actually, I don't. I like to be super humble about it because I like to know what people's honest opinions are. And I think when you start to tell people that you know about a product, they start to get scared about it. And they're like, oh, I've got to impress this person. And it's not necessarily true. It's like if I ask you like, hey, what beer are you drinking right now? What do you like to drink? I don't really want you to pull out some crazy beer for me. Like if you're like, I'm drinking Coors, it's the banquet beer. Great. That's awesome. I think that people get a little bit afraid if you start to tell them that you know about stuff, or they start to try to like one up you. And it's like, no, just tell me like, what are you eating right now? What makes you excited? I'll tell you, there's a few spots in Louisville that do a really exceptional job at it. There is a Murray's shop in the New Albany Kroger. And there's a girl named Roselle that runs that shop, and she's an all-star.
That's cool.
She's
I will go just, there and check that out.
She is awesome. If you catch her, she obviously works busy times. So Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. But she's awesome. She's a rock star at it. This is what she does, and she enjoys it. She's been a cheese professional for almost 10 years, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, she's got a lot of room on you.
Yeah. She's, but she's awesome. And I mean, like, I think that's the real thing about, any sort of specialty food is like finding the culture that makes you happy and just kind of getting into it. But yeah, any local cheese shop, if you go in, they better offer you samples. If they're not offering you samples, then they're not doing their job. But you should always ask to try things. You should always ask. That's part of being in a cheese shop. You should always have samples in front of you.
Well, this isn't a cheese shop, but I know you brought some stuff, I'm going to ask you to try it.
All right. So you want to try the first one?
Please, yeah.
All right.
Let's do that. Homebrew shop.
For our first show and tell segment.
All right. This is going to be a threefer. There's three different parts to this.
Okay.
I will say the best podcast episodes that we have are ones that involve food.
All right. You're good. Let me scoot your behind you. Sorry.
Yeah, we did one episode that involves some Cabot cheese. It was super good, and I think we all like cheesed ourselves into a coma. Mm-hmm. There's still a little left.
Well, this is we're gonna talk about beer and cheese today. Please. So that is the main focus that I'm gonna bring in today. I'm gonna grab a couple things out of this refrigerator.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So the cheese I brought, the first cheese I brought for you today, is called Mount St. Francis. And this is a funky mistress.
I was gonna say I can smell some.
Yeah.
I was gonna ask who was like cheesing over here. I see why they call it cutting the cheese now.
Okay. So the outside of this cheese is orange in color because of the introduction of bacteria called Brevibacteria linens. So these bacteria basically, so it's a process, right? So you separate your curds away, you put it in a mold, and then you let your cheese dry out. This cheese is aged in a vacuum seal for about 8 months.
Wow.
They pull this out and they start washing the outside with salt water. After a few days, this mold is, or this bacteria is actually introduced to the cheese and it starts to grow on the outside. A few days later, when you start to get a little bit of orange, they start introducing his dark materials.
Whoa, really?
So
wow.
This cheese is basically washed with his dark materials. The bacteria eats the cheese. That's what gives it this big funky smell. That same smell is actually caused by the same bacteria that is in your foot, which is why your feet stink. John, this is why your feet stink.
Thank you, God. Thank you.
So traditionally with a washed rind cheese, I would have something like a Saison. I like something that also has a little bit of sweetness in it. So we did a honey added Saison. And you tell people more about this because you're going to do the same thing I'm going to do, which is read a label. So
yeah, Noblesse Oblique, Jester King, which is in
Austin, Texas.
Okay. I've never had this, but I mean, Jester King is bar none one of the best sour breweries around, and especially their saisons are always on freaking point. And then this is with Alberon Brasserie, which is Belgian or French.
It should be Belgian.
Yeah. And I guess this was a collab that they made together. Beer de Garde, so that's like a Belgian style Saison, basically. And then they've added honey in here. And Saison just means summer, so it's a nice light, you know, usually a little bit of wheat, usually a little bit of Pilsner malt fermented with that really nice Saison-y yeast that brings out those kind of straw, clove, sometimes kind of light coriander notes. And it's just light, crisp, crushable, effable in whichever way you want to like.
Okay, so we're going to do this two ways. First, we're going to try his dark materials.
All right.
Just a little bit.
So I shouldn't shotgun the can.
It's a perfect shotgun beer. Here, get another glass. Thank you, sir.
Gonna see, you're going to be able to taste a lot of the same. Basically, the malts will still reside on the outside of this cheese.
That's what's cool about the whole coming. People always compare, you know, beer and wine or cheese and wine. They think of that as a natural pairing. And it is. Those things go great together. But cheese, especially cheese like this, has so much more in common with beers like this that kind of have that crazy fermentation side behind them all.
You gave away some of the process here. Is this particular cheese more about the process or the ingredients with the bacteria being specifically called out?
A little bit of both.
I think you can have one without the
other. Capriole is a small goat cheese producer that's based out of Greenville, Indiana. So very hyper local to us. And actually Judy Shad, who is the matriarch of this company, is kind of the grandmother of, she is the goat. She is the true goat. She's goated. But she is the matriarch of this company. And she's one of the, original goat cheese makers in the US, along with the company, now I can't think of the name, but Cypress Grove out of California.
Okay.
They were kind of the first cheesemakers. She's still independent. She's still rocking it out. she's awesome. But yeah, this is washed in his dark materials. So I would recommend we're going to take a little bite of this and try it basically side by side with this beer. This beer will also go really well with it. Kind of one of those things, what grows together goes together.
Hell yeah. I like that. So that's a good saying.
Yeah, it's a...
So what do you, is there a cheese, cheers?
Propes.
Propes.
That's not really no. what they say. <Is there? laughs> Salud.
Salud.
All right, so here we go. Smells kind of like woody and a little bit salty. A little bit, I mean, cheesy for lack of a better term. Very creamy.
It's soft, it's creamy. So creamy.
The little bit, can, the rind has that, not a crunch.
If you breathe in real hard before you take any beer, you're going to get a lot of that funk.
Yeah, it does smell like my old gym shoes a little bit.
Yeah.
But man, the flavor profile is insane. That's popping. I love the creaminess of the inside too. And a little bit of the texture from the rind.
So when you say it's washed with his dark materials, like what's that process look like?
So a lot of people think it's just like, well, they dunk it in his dark materials and that's it. But really what the process is you would basically dip your gloves into his dark materials, rub the outside just to keep the surface moist as the cheese ages. So that's really the process of
and I'm sure the beer kind of soaks in a little bit, but it'll, then the bacteria are also going to be working on the 100%. Beer. And they kind of just combine the two. Kind of people talking beer, especially like the New England IPAs, about biotransformation of different like hop compounds and stuff. But I guarantee you there's some like interaction and metabolism between those bacteria and the beer and the cheese and the like.
I like to think of like Brevolinum bacteria a lot like you would think of Brettanomyces.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's just a sugar...
Yep.
Like whore. Yes. It's going to eat everything.
Yep. And that's what causes kind of that funk.
It is very good.
It's really super good.
I love the creaminess.
So this is kind of like a washed rind cheese with training wheels. Like I wanted you to have an experience of something that's delicious and not going to be a complete palate killer.
Mm-hmm. It's also worth saying that his dark materials is freaking great. This is such a good, very good.
Great milk stout from Monic just down the road in Schnitzelberg.
I wonder if the lactose, I just wonder if they would taste the same if you had a milk stout versus non-milk stout on a cheese like this. I just wonder if there's any special interaction between the bacteria and the lactose.
So this cheese at one point was washed with Willetized.
Oh yeah.
When I made cheese with this company for a little bit just because I was curious and you curiosity like kills the cat. But yeah, when I was working there, this was actually made with Willetized. And they kind of switched over to his dark materials fully.
It's a little bit cheaper too, I bet.
Yeah. Well, you
and more local.
How often can you call them and be like, "Hey, Lagunitas, I need 6 barrels of Willetized for the rest of the year." Like, yeah, dream on.
Well, and Lagunitas is no longer like a privately owned, you know, small business, quote unquote, anymore either. They're bought by I can't remember who owns them now, but
it was never really.
Is as an unexperienced person, is there anything that I should have discerned to point me towards that being washed with his dark materials? Or is that just process?
That's just me knowing.
Okay.
All right, that's really just me knowing. So a lot of times
trying to glean something.
Yeah, you won't really, a lot of times you won't necessarily see special washes. This I just know for experience that that's what they use for this one. So you'll see some stuff from Jasper Hill. Jasper Hill's a cheese company based out of Vermont. They are an affineur, meaning that they age cheeses. That's their real business. So if you ever see Cabot Clothbound Cheddar, Cabot is a company you're familiar with from one of your last shows.
Yep.
Cabot Clothbound is actually, they coat it in lard, wrap it in cloth, and they throw it in their caves at Jasper Hill. Wow. So that is a collab type of product.
Can you buy cheese futures? Like you can buy like oil futures.
I don't know. I think maybe that's the business I need to be in.
Yeah, buy a cow. Like now I'm thinking about it and I'm like, man, if I had the capital, I could invest in some cheese. There's like some caves in Missouri, I think it is, where they have like the world reserve of cheese.
Whew. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Goodness.
There we go.
I'm not quite sure on that. I will say that there are a lot of awesome cave-aged cheeses that are made in the States. Right outside of Michigan, I believe, there's the Caves of Faribault, which are fantastic.
It sounds like a place that cheese is aged in.
Yeah, they make a blue cheese there called the Felix, and it is a showstopper, out of control.
And I'm imagining the cave environment is good for cheese, just like it is for beer. It's just very temperature steady. It's like you can moisture controlled. It's just like safe and snuggly.
I find it super interesting with the way that cheese is treated as a, like the FDA or the health departments treat cheese, because they treat it like it's this product that's going to get you sick, and it's so bad for you. And you're like, cheese doesn't really go along with the same food safe things that you learn in restaurants, where mm-hmm. it's like, keep it below 40 degrees. Mm-hmm. It's like you're aging it in a cave where it's going to be sitting at, you know, 44, 45 degrees. It's not always that cold. The English and the French also just have no rules about it. And it's kind of better that way. I've had a lot of French cheeses that are pretty spectacular, but they don't really go by the same rules that we abide by in the US.
That big cheese lobby, man.
So
I actually want to go wherever that is. That sounds fun too.
I had to look. There's 1.4 billion pounds of cheese stored in a cave in Missouri.
1.4 billion.
This was started in the 70s by Jimmy Carter, and he was trying to give farmers a break, but the government couldn't buy milk and store it, so they instead bought cheese and stored it.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that for a second.
And then it still exists now, but we're not going back into the 70s.
No. That's just one thing that's interesting about cheese, too. And cheese has such a long history with humanity. I mean, it's crazy. People have been doing this for, the oldest cheese that I could think of was, I mean, obviously the Sumerians had it, but cheese seems like one of those things that goes back to probably right around the time, or maybe even a little bit before, we started domesticating animals.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere in that kind of like Natufian, like,
there's
Göbekli Tepe, like,
and you know,
era.
There's like every couple of years, they're like, we found
the cheese.
Cheese that the Greeks made, and it's in this vat. And it's like, who would dare eat the forbidden cheese?
But that's it's a great way to store calories long term. And, you know, beer is good because it doesn't spoil like water can spoil. Wine is good. And you can also take those calories that are produced during, you know, small windows of the year and preserve them to be able to eat in the winter, to be able to eat in the whatever. Cheese is one of those like caloric stores from humanity that probably humans wouldn't have survived in the way that we did if we didn't discover those things. And it's a culmination of like the cattle or the, you know, the animal that's making it, the domestication process, but then also the bacteria and the ability to store it. Like, it's very fascinating to think about the history of cheese
and sex, beer, and death.
Yeah Is that what that's all about?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So this is a completely different experience tasting this with this Nibbles Oblique from Chester King.
That's fantastic.
It's brighter. It pairs better.
Yes.
It opens up.
This was the pairing that I wanted to do, but this is, I just wanted to bring the His Dark material just to kind of see what they're working with.
Now, did you just dip your cheese in your Saison? Did I see someone do that?
Nope.
No. Yeah, maybe I was just thinking about doing it.
You're projecting.
It's you.
Okay.
Is that party foul? I'm not mad at it though.
Yeah, you're right. This cheese is now all of a sudden a lot brighter after the Saison.
And that's kind of the idea of a pairing, is that you really want to bring out all the flavors that, like, the His Dark material kind of hides some of those flavors.
Mm-hmm. And you said this is made in, what was the farm in Southern Indiana?
It's Capriole Farms, Greenville, Indiana.
That's so cool that it's so close to home.
Yeah, that's really close. It's just right off the Greenville exit.
That's fantastic. Thank you, sir.
You're
delicious
welcome.
Cheese.
It continues to get better.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I just want, and so when you, I mean, is this, you buy this at like farmers markets, you go there and get it like just directly from them?
Yeah, because you said one of the harder parts is them getting it out to the market and it being labor intensive and 20 hours
a
day.
Take your time.
So Capriole's been around. They have a team. They do a great job. You can buy this at Whole Foods.
Okay.
It's a plug for Whole Foods. Go buy it at Whole Foods.
You're supporting the farm ultimately when you do that. You know, if you can't get to the farm, you might as well get it where you can get it.
There's probably a few other local shops around here and between here and Lexington that would sell it. You can get a lot of their stuff at Cultured downtown.
I do like them. Yeah. Can you do like cheese tours like you can do brewery tours?
Oh, man. That was really fun. At a past spot that I was working, we had the brew tours guide that would come through.
Keith Mitchell. Yeah. Or not Mitchell. Last name?
Keith.
He would come through with groups and they would stop by and I'd make them like sample plates and things like that. And it, again, it's not really a cheese tour. There's not much cheese in Louisville to speak of, but it's kind of a fun concept all the same.
Yeah. So let's buy a bus.
Yeah. Let's buy a bus.
Let's go to cheese tours.
I mean, that's like long term. I think at some point I would like to get back into selling cheese retail. I think that having a big specialty store in Louisville is awesome. I think there's a lot of cool opportunity for it. Unfortunately, I think that Lots of Pasta was kind of like the beacon for a long time. And maybe in the past decade or so, they've kind of fallen off that like pedestal that maybe they once held. Maybe that still exists. But I just don't find the same quality that I used to find there.
I feel like a lot of people shop for cheeses at the same place they go for a nice bottle of wine. Like I know, like, you know, the Liquor Barns or like this Total Wine do cheese. Like, do those kind of, are those places good or not?
A lot of Boar's Head.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a lot of Boar's Head sponsorships.
Which is kind of like, okay, it's better probably than big cheese. But
I guess that was the thing that I was really trying to focus on with the business. And you kind of, when you start to talk to it and you start to think about like, what's the logistics of me like cutting cheese and distributing to all these places and setting up shops in there? It's like, it's a full-time job to do one shop, much less to try to be like, oh, I'm going to undercut myself and set up like five or six different places. I'd still like to do it, but I would have to really think about the logistics of doing it and like, how does it actually work?
Is there a way to go direct to consumer?
Yeah. I don't know that that's, having a shop's really the best.
Yeah.
Best somewhere bet that
you,
because
you
that.
Can't do that online that what and you're talking and about.
Again, we've talked about it too. It's like, it's hard to say like, hey, you want to try this cheese through the internet?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I do, but that's not going to help you buy it at the time.
That's like, how I feel about the homebrew store. It's like you can buy homebrew kits on Amazon, but it's just exactly like what you're saying. Like you can't ask questions about, hey, I want to tweak this, or I want to do Bell's Two Hearted, but I want to do this, but I like love mm-hmm. that.
And like, what malts do you think are the best, and what has the most smoke profile, and what has, you know, anything else?
Yeah. Which is what has kept humanity together with those stored calories and the conversations.
I think that retail stores are a vital part of our existence. And the more that we get towards the internet and away from those, the worse off we probably are in some ways.
ChatGPT taking over.
And because John said ChatGPT taking over, that means it is time for our ceremonial Berg break.
Berg break.
We just had some cheese. We just had some beer. Personally, I love a good Underberg in between, you know, samplings. If you're not. Oh, and John's playing the Underberg song right now. So that's fun. Adam, you're familiar with Underberg?
Oh, I'm familiar.
Yeah, good digestive for those not familiar.
I'm no stranger to the Berg.
It's good, you know, like if you just want to break from alcohol, if you want to just settle the stomach for a second, this is always a great this is always a great go-to little beverage real fast, you know?
I think it has to be said, though, to take a break from alcohol, this is 44% alcohol.
I mean, but it's like inconsequential amount based on... Yeah, I mean, you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it. It's the FDA considers it a food product. So
this is 44% volume. So
by volume, yeah,
yeah. I mean,
it's a small volume.
Jury's out.
yeah, exactly. So you know, Louisville loves Underberg. I think that's what we've learned over the last few years or so. You can find it in multiple breweries around town.
Multiple bottle shops. If you don't have it, ask for it.
Ask for an Underberg.
Ask for a Berg.
And so it's a good little break more than anything. Yeah. Like you drink a couple beers, you just like want something different, or it's like the end of the night.
It's a good little palate cleanser for the next thing. So cheers, Gal.
Cheers, Underberg.
Cheers to Bergs.
Makes me hungry for more cheese.
You know, Underberg's. No, Underberg's barrel aged.
Yeah, right.
It's aged in Slovakian oak, I believe.
Someday we will get somebody from Underberg on to explain the process to us. I'm not saying they have to give away the secret sauce, but that's another whole fascinating conversation.
Absolutely. One of the things that we like to do every so often is to take questions from Reddit. And granted, we usually do it in the context of beer, but I did decide to get questions from Reddit. And so this is open forum, but although Adam, I think that you might be the most apt to answer.
Usually we just try to shit on the beer nerds of the world, but like cheese nerds are a thing too.
So we'll actually just start this out for you, Adam. This comes from user Dyrozang on R Cheese, titled "Storage Methods for Cheese." Hi, everybody. I've been slowly spreading my interest to cheese more and more over the past few years, and I'm searching for a better storage method for my cheese. I normally receive the cheese in the, I think, wax paper from the cheese store. And after I initially open it I then store it in an airtight Tupperware container. This works well enough for most cheeses. So far, hasn't been working too well for cheeses with bloomy rind. But I'm just looking for something a little bit better as a step up that can ideally hold cheese for 2 weeks to at most a month. I'm open to all ideas. Thanks.
That's a nice question.
It's a good question.
How do you store cheese?
Ovteen paper. This is my brand plug right here. It's Ovteen, Ovtene. It is a eggshell technology paper that uses a little bit of plastic, so you're not wrapping in plastic, but you're also not wrapping in paper. It's a nice film. I've wrapped brie in it that have lasted for a month. If you wrap in plastic at a retail shop, you're going to have about a week to sell a bloomy rind cheese like a brie. Months. And I wouldn't recommend putting everything in there for months, but the life of your cheese is going to be much, much longer if you use Ovteen paper. That is my favorite one. It's the easiest one to work with, and it's like folding origami around your cheese.
And the whole point is that you want your cheese to be able to breathe. Is that
you want to be able to breathe a little bit?
Yeah.
You don't want to suffocate it. Cheese is a living organism, and it will die.
And once you use this paper, you can't reuse it.
It's cheap enough that you don't have to.
Okay. Like parchment paper.
It feels like parchment paper.
Is this what that is back there?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
So okay. It feels a lot like a mixture of parchment paper and wax paper.
Cool.
But it just, I don't know their secret. I don't know the secret sauce, but it's really good.
That's an excellent shout out.
Because like you said, or we were talking about earlier, like you go in and you spend an obscene amount of cheese or money on cheese, and you're like, okay, now how do I have it for like a week or two? Because
you're trying to buy it on futures.
So you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it at a lot of cheese shops, and it's normally about $15 to $20 for a pack of 20 sheets. However, those sheets are about three times larger than you need. You just cut them down and they last a while.
So you got enough for 60 cheeses.
And if you're buying some nice cheeses, you're saving money.
Yeah, you know? I can't speak highly enough about it. As a person who's worked in a lot of retail shops and spent a lot of time merchandising cheese, this has been the thing that I've found just really keeps the waste down.
Should you ever vacuum seal your cheese?
Hey.
I don't know why that's funny.
The health department says no. But yeah, I mean, it's not bad either. So there are certain like HAPSA plans you're supposed to if you're working commercially and you're vacuum sealing cheeses, you have to have a HAPSA plan, et cetera, because
HAPSA
they say
is health and safety protocol. What is what does that one stand for?
It's some
long acronym like that.
Government bullshit. Okay.
That was what I was going to say, and I'm just glad you beat me to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's really, they say that, you know, it traps bacteria.
But it's just like guidelines that are like recommended.
They say that vacuum sealing traps bacteria and things like that. And then if it's out of temperature, it's going to grow. I don't really buy that, but... I just wrap it in this paper. It'll do everything and more you want to. Of team.
Of yeah. team.
The next question is actually a two-parter, with the first being a question of mine, because it just gives me context for the next question. What is raclette?
Raclette is a super meltable cheese that is normally served over top of roasted potatoes. And
oh, that's the Instagram cheese.
Yeah, it is also a wash-drying cheese, so it is a funky exterior cheese. It originates somewhere between France and Switzerland. There's French raclette, which is going to be really funky, and then there's Swiss raclette, which does not necessarily have as much rind on it. Emmy Roth, I believe, is the company that makes the Swiss version of raclette. Just super melty. Put it underneath a heat lamp and then kind of scrape off the cheese onto whatever you're serving.
Okay, thank you. That gives me context for the question that comes from username worst name. I'm having a raclette party this Saturday for my birthday, and I'm looking for beer pairing suggestions. Random internet search results suggest everything from box to sour reds or browns to Belgian strong pills, but I'm looking for specific beers I can pick up in Wisconsin. Let's, for intents and purposes, just get rid of the Wisconsin part. That'll blow my socks off when paired with the deliciousness of a French raclette.
I think we got to start here, honestly. If you can find this Noblesse Oblique, I think that you'd be thrilled. It's going to rock you. I think that your search inquiry was correct in that there's not really a right or wrong answer to this question. I think it's really based around what you like. I think that saisons would be great with having a raclette night, just because you're going to have a lot of earthiness. And it depends on, I guess, if you're doing a French raclette, you're going to have a lot more funk. I don't think that there's anything wrong with getting a spotted cow and having a raclette night. I think that sounds pretty fantastic, raclette honestly.
Raclette and spotted cow, that sounds amazing.
I think so, too. What are some of your all's favorite beers in Wisconsin? Mm-hmm. Wisconsin? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like anything Nuclearis comes to mind easily enough. Something I think would go well with that is like any of the Blackberry Farms, their saisons are really good.
Yeah.
Or like an Oxbow. They were putting out some really cool farmhouse pale ales for a while that had a little bit of like the bitterness and also the funky character with them too. And I mean, if you want to be like pinkies out, I mean, just go straight to Belgium and get a Dre Fontenon bottle or... Probably not.
Get an Orvel. I think Orvel would be fantastic with a raclette night.
That's what I was just thinking about, the Belgian pale ale. I mean, an Orvel just sounds so good with that.
Absolutely.
Bush Light might be in there somewhere.
I mean, the first time I ever went to Wisconsin, I got there pretty late. I was staying with a friend, and they opened up their apartment door at like 10 p.m., and it was this couple that just moved there, and they greeted me with a High Life and a plate of cheese curds.
Hell yeah,
like literally, man. When they opened up the door, they just handed it to me. I was like, "Oh, this is great. Welcome to Wisconsin."
Yes,
they love you.
That is incredible.
Yeah, so I guess to answer the question fully, like it is going to be completely up to you. But those are some of like I think that finding a nice saison, buy a big bottle of something. They don't put it in a big bottle because it sucks normally. It's kind of how I feel about that most of the time. If you're going to have a party and you want to do it upright, buy something that they felt was worthy of putting in a big bottle and limiting.
That's a good move.
Probably awesome.
And share it.
Share it. And you can buy three or four and you can share all of them.
Yeah. These are meant for experience, not for like.
And that's kind of sounds. But so having a raclette night at home, I feel the same way. It's really about the experience. It's not about like, oh, I'm going to get full on raclette because
I'm here. Yeah.
Just like, pour it right
I'm here
in.
To eat a bunch of cheese and be full. It's really about an experience, and it's about sharing the time with your friends. So yeah, get some shareable bottles and figure out what you like, because if you like it, it's probably going to go with whatever you got.
That's excellent advice.
If you didn't want to do like a birrio cart, could you do a ricotta cart? Like, you have to eat like 6 ounces of cheese every lap before like you finish Mario the cart? Race.
Oh my God.
Do we not know what birrio cart is?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you've just created a new like problem in my life. So.
Yeah,
it's actually a bike race. Actually,
it's 5K.
It's an alley cat bike race, and then at every stop, you have to eat at least 3 ounces of cheese.
See, yeah. I'm here for this.
Fun.
Yeah.
This next one comes from a user Chilu. I don't know. Who cares? Cheese guys, what's your weirdest customer? I work in a local cheese shop, and I had some pretty weird customers. One time, some Polish guys came in. I am Dutch. And they came here and liked our cheese. They bought 7 kilograms, around 15 pounds for the Americans here, of young cheese. So my question is, what is the weirdest customer you've had?
I've had a lot of customers that buy large volumes, and I never really find anything too weird about that. My weirdest customer is actually, I can't even talk about it because
sometimes customers are the best customers.
I know too much about this person. there was this person that was a very noticeable figure that came into Whole Foods a lot. And, when we were asking, we had a cheese.
It was Jack Harlow.
Something like the Jack Harlow. He's just a very unique person. He kind of carried around everything with him at all times, rode a bike everywhere, a very strange guy. And he would always come and he would sample all the cheeses we had out. And that was really his routine, he was the sample guy. And then he would talk to you about cheese. And he never bought anything. I don't really think he had the money to buy cheese. And that's fine. That's not the issue. But when I asked for his email address, I'll never forget it. because it was just so off the cuff and he was so excited about it. I don't want
to
say it.
I'm trying to think how you can tell us without telling us.
I'll have to
maybe
say it
just
later.
Give us the thing without the @.com, or would that ruin it?
Yeah, it would ruin it.
Okay, right.
Yeah, it was pretty absurd.
Did it have to do with the cheese kink?
No, it's really
shame that.
You know? Yeah.
It's just
tell it, and John promised to bleep it out.
It's
There all you right, go.
So it's at angelfire.com.
Okay.
And it was you'll hear it later and you'll understand. But I don't know that he was like, if for some reason I just remember him, like I'm like, oh, I'll never forget you. But I've also had lots of, I'll never forget you. Man in the bicycle.
I think you just wrote the sequel to The Notebook. Like, yeah, this is the new, still a better love story than Twilight.
The cheesecloth.
I know he's still alive, and I see him riding a bike around every once in a while, which makes it like a thing where I'm like, I can't, if somehow this got back to him, I'd feel so bad and I'd probably get sued. And like, I'm not trying to do either one of those things right now. But I think other than that,
respect for having an Angel Fire email.
So. Yeah.
How random.
Big ups. But other than that, we, at the last shop I worked at, there's a lot of French customers that would come in and just talk trash with me. And that was always fun. It's always nice to see people from different cultures that are like, this is awesome. This is a place that I want to be. And this is something that I want. Mm.
This last one, it's more quick fire. John and David, I want you to go first, and then you can give your opinion, because I didn't even know this was the thing.
Because we're going to be terrible, and then you'll tell the truth.
Yeah, this comes from, I don't even care who it came from. It's on Archie's. And it says, the restaurant I work at is restructuring the tip pool, and they've decided the cheesemonger who builds the board gets a tip out. We're not sure what the percentage would be. Does anyone have any experience with that?
100%.
100% tip out?
He built the board, or they built the board.
Okay. I would kind of consider that like being the beer buyer or being like the cheese buyer. Should you get the tips?
It's back of house. If you're doing all the work, I mean.
It's a tip pool, though. So like, what percentage?
I guess I'm not sure. Obviously, I'll just be speaking out of ignorance, and we'll let you give the educated opinion.
Yeah.
But I would suspect a small percentage, but a percentage that would be enough to incentivize, you know, caring and then trying to work with the servers to help them do a better job interfacing with their customers. So basically trying to create an incentive to empower to motivate the cheesemonger, is that the right term?
Sure.
To interface with the staff and just make sure they're prepared to go out and do their job. 15%?
And to be clear, I meant 100% to the cheesemonger, because all they're doing is picking up the tray and walking it out.
No, they're talking to the customers. Okay. They're doing that thing you were talking, because you can't be there all the time to have that face-to-face interaction with everybody. So it's like, how do you empower those people to do their jobs the best? Is it giving them all of it and being like, I don't want none of this. Like, you know, you guys just do your work and get your tips. Or if you do have an incentive, and this isn't even talking about you, this is like how one would do it if one was trying to organize the best business model. I'm sticking with like 15%.
I think it matters how much razzle dazzle they have. Are they putting out garbage? Because I'll be honest, I make really nice looking cheese boards. If you don't want to tip me out and you just think that I'm there to make food for customers and I'm part of the kitchen staff, okay, don't tip me out. But I don't know how much extra razzle dazzle I'm going to put in it. Their cheese boards are very time consuming. Mm-hmm. They also can drive business in ways that you wouldn't expect. You know,
Instagram.
There's a lot to building them and doing them well. So it really just depends on, I think it's like any other job. What's it worth to you, right? What is this person doing a above average job worth to you? And what's it worth to you if he does a subpar job or they do a subpar job? I think that's the real question, is trying to figure out what's it really worth to you? Because I'll be honest, I've worked for tips in a cheese shop and I made really good money because I did really good work.
So maybe you just leave it up to the individual server's decision. So then it's more about the relationship.
I think that blanket tipping is kind of bullshit to begin with.
Tipping in general is kind of fucked, honestly.
It is, but people don't pay anybody enough money to really
That's what I mean.
Also think that people tend to like minimalize things, is like an artist could say like, oh, I could paint a Warhol, it's just a soup can. And it's like, yeah, well, if you you'd fucking do it.
A lot of it's more about the person that does it than the actual thing, right? Because like Andy Warhol could shit on the floor and you would go like, oh, this is art.
Yeah.
And it's like, but if I did it, you'd just be like, dude, that's gross. I wish you didn't do that.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess it's all about context and about, you know, what's it worth to you?
Well, speaking of things that are worth a lot of money to me, there's a piece of cheese sitting on the table that I've been buying for a while.
Round two.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and see what else you got for us.
Okay. This is another type of beer cheese.
Hell yeah.
So this is going to be, this is the hops. It is made in Indianapolis. This one's not going to be nearly as funky. This is a double cream cheese, meaning that it has at least 60% butterfat. If you see triple cream, that is a 70% butterfat cheese.
Oh my God.
Wow.
This is 60%.
And so butterfat. That's more whey than curd? Or am I totally mixing up the terminology?
You're totally
there?
Mixing them up.
Okay. The butterfat.
Butterfat.
Is. Explain that part to me.
So when you are making cheese, you have your milk that goes into a vat and you separate your curds and your whey.
And the curds are the things that.
That congeal.
Yeah. So those, it's like the protein and the.
So this is just going to have a lot of butterfat left.
Okay.
So I don't know what kind of cows this company uses per se, but you know, a lot of American cheeses use Jersey cows. Jersey cows have a much higher fat content in their cheese. This is super high fat content cheese. And this is blended with a porter, and I can't remember the name of the brewery now offhand.
Did we say Centerpoint earlier?
Centerpoint.
Yeah. Okay.
It is the Centerpoint porter. This is also kind of funky. And this one has a little more tang to it. So
yeah,
Has a little more body.
Mm-hmm. Still nice and creamy. More going towards like the, like not cheddar, but more cheddar-y than the last one we tried, which I would say was more like Munster-y for, I don't know. So it was just kind of more, I don't know how you would describe that. I need to work on my cheese vocabulary, but let's get in the
This one's
the
a little rind. Bit more like a Havarti to me.
Okay, yeah, there you go. Cause, and it even has like the, what do you call that? Not marbling.
Off, well, it's like off-gassing. So basically yeah. those are.
Reminiscent of a Swiss yeah. or like a whatever kind of cheese.
And then,
this is really good.
Now you have the one last beer to pull out for this one.
This is incredible.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, I have no words for this.
This is very good. This
hops is one of my all-time favorite cheeses.
This is one of the best cheeses I've had in recency. Wonderful.
Yep. And this is a pairing that I've done with this a few different times. Do some pairings with Mile Wide Brewing. Scott Schreffler is a great friend of mine.
Excellent dude. All the people at Mile Wide are excellent dudes, actually.
So this is one that we have a little project that we do with
so fucking good.
It used to be with another bank, but now it's a gentleman with PNC Bank.
Fifth Third. Jeremy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. He's with Fifth Third now. PNC, he's yeah.
This Jeremy. Is like a blend of like every cheese that I like. Mm-hmm. Like at the Swiss Manchego,
it's a showstopper, dude.
Yeah, this has got everything in it from like a little tiny bit of nuttiness to mm-hmm. the tangy, and it's still super creamy.
So
it's got that characteristic that I would define as like sharp, but what is that? I mean, tangy is probably a better term for that because it is like a little bit. It's what I love about a really good like sharp like cheddar or something like that. But yeah, Gruyere or like something is probably better, closer to what that is.
And then, so this is McPoyle Milk Stout. So
hell yeah.
I wanted to do something that has, this can stand up to a little bit more body. I think that you found with the His Dark Materials that it just kind of washed out mm-hmm. that cheese.
Sure.
This is going to go well with McPoyle because you've got this big fatty cheese and you've got this, like this fat will kind of coat the inside of your mouth and then it'll just kind of wash this beer right down.
Yeah.
When it keeps getting, the more you taste yes. the beer, it gets deeper yeah. and deeper and deeper into that.
This is one of my favorites that I've done over the past couple of years. And so I thought that this would be a very fun one to share with you all.
Yeah, dude, this might be in my, like, I was going to say like my top 10 favorite cheeses, but I'm just going to go ahead and put this one right up at the top. Honestly, I don't know if I've ever had cheese I enjoy more than this.
So how do you actually experience and taste a cheese and beer pairing? Because like I see that you have a strategy, like you're like taking a sip, you're taking a bite.
I like to try the cheese alone first and just kind of get the flavor in my mouth and kind of experience like what I'm working with. And that's really like I've done a lot of cheese pairings where I've had to do them blind, where it's just like these are the beers we're doing, pick out some cheeses and you go, oh shit. So a lot of the times with those, what you do is you kind of go to your textbook pairings, you know, you do a wheat beer with a Chev, or you do an IPA and a cheddar. Those are going to, mm-hmm. a big, like, punchy IPA and a sharp cheddar, they balance each other out really well. And then certain things like this, you get to play around with. And like, I normally will take time and sit down with Scott and we'll bring out five or six different cheeses and five or six different beers. And we'll try all of them back to back. And we'll say like, this really goes with this. Why? This really goes with this. Well, why? But yeah, I think that dark beers go really well with blue cheeses. They go really well with a little bit of fat. So anything funky, creamy.
Sounds like a terrible job. It's, for the record.
It's,
yeah.
It's awful.
The tang that you get out of that, which is kind of what I might call sharp or might call tangy or whatever, but it almost reminds me of like, obviously McPoyle or any of these stouts aren't like sharp, but there is a certain little bit of like tannin that comes from those like dark roasted grains and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That kind of has given me the vibe where they do different things.
Yeah.
It's totally different, but those two things connect somehow on my palate, which is really cool.
Yeah, it just, it makes a balance, right? It's two conflicting flavors that just kind of lay on top of each other and work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like peanut butter and jelly don't taste the same, but they go this really good incredible. Together.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is wizardry at its finest, because the idea of trying to even source these things and pair them together sounds daunting on a whole. But it's very good.
Very good. Just like the fat and the mouthfeel of this is works so well together.
Also, I just like ate that whole rind.
Are you not supposed to?
No, you're welcome to.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah, I did too.
It's funky. I mean, I don't personally care for it, but I've also had this cheese about 900 times.
And,
So can you? Is there an instance where you just shouldn't eat the rind? Like, I don't. I still don't really know those rules.
I mean, like, I think if you see a cheese that there's a couple things like Pecorino Toscano, I wouldn't really ever eat the rind on Pecorino Toscano. There's lots of, like, don't eat the wax rind. It's kind of like eating a crayon. Wax.
Hey, I like eating crayons.
Yeah, so like red wax Gouda, you probably don't want to eat the rind on that. I mean, you can.
So those like a laughing cow,
you're not supposed to just, it's not like a Percocet. You don't just pop it in and take it down.
Way better than a Percocet.
About it as addicting, though, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, totally.
Well, yeah, is there any truth to the casein being an inhibitor that's the same as like other drugs?
There's all sorts of studies that say that, you know, it releases something in your body, like a certain chemical that makes you feel high. And I mean, I feel pretty high right now, so I don't know. Maybe it's true.
High on cheese.
But I mean, like, how could you like eat this and then be like, I'm mad.
Yeah.
I don't want to do any. I want to be left alone. Like, I mean, it's just.
Of course, you know, just with alcohol, everything in moderation. But there's no way eating something that like high in calories and high in fat, like humans are designed to love that. That gives you that little dopamine rush, that little serotonin rush.
I do want to be left alone, but with like a brick of this,
like a plate of this, like don't touch it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Cheese night.
So we're going to be talking a little bit here about the Craft Brewers Conference, CBC. It's going to be hosted in Nashville this year. Are there any cheese spots in Nashville that you know of that you'd recommend?
Check out Gray's. They just opened in Nashville. Gray's is awesome. G-R-E-Y-S. They originated, I believe, in Knoxville. Nashville's their new venture. Super sweet people. They really know their stuff. And I would definitely recommend checking them out. They also do really fantastic sandwiches. So check out Grace.
Oof. That sounds like a good spot to go. Like, buy a nice hunk of cheese and get a good sandwich.
If you're in Tennessee and you can find anything from Blackberry Farms, pick those up, because not even the beers, the cheeses.
Yeah, yeah.
They make really fantastic cheese as well.
I'm glad that you spelled it, because I would have spelled it G-R-A-Z-E.
Oh, great. Okay.
Because you're clever.
Goats, yeah.
No.
But
in other national news, I was reading an article yesterday about Athletic Brewing, which we have had some samples on the show before, but they are poised to become a top 15 craft brewery by 2024.
Like completely NA beer.
Yes, Athletic is non-alcoholic. Like I said, we tasted some of their products probably about a year ago at this point, and really good. And I've bought a few since then, and they really like have refined that profile that they're trying to hit. And I mean, unless you've got your eyes closed, you're understanding a little bit more that people are trending towards not drinking as much. And now, even I noticed I went to a concert last weekend, and I was like, okay, well, like me and maybe like 15 other people have beers, and this is a sold out show. And I think everything comes in ebbs and flows, so just trendy. But the fact that a non-alcoholic beer company can burst into the top 15 craft breweries is, I think, pretty remarkable on its own.
Within a couple of years, because they're an older brewery. I don't remember when they were founded.
They've been around since 2017.
Yeah. 17, but they really like had. I mean, during COVID, kind of is when their exponential growth seemed like it started.
I don't know that part, but I mean, like 170,000 barrels in 2022 alone.
Nuts.
It was pretty insane.
For non-alcoholic beer, that's kind of expensive.
I mean, there's nobody in Louisville that's producing, or in the state that's producing, maybe West 6, but like 170,000 barrels of beer is that's a massive scale, and they're selling it and they're distributing it, and
people are buying it.
I buy it. I mean,
I think they have a really good marketing angle too. Calling something athletic kind of also leans into that whole idea that it is healthier for you, mm-hmm. and it is better for you, and it is like it is the gym that you should be acquiring.
Yeah.
I think they do a really good job,
and they lean into that with their marketing dollars too, with the sponsorships, sponsoring different races, you know, whether they be like 10Ks or halves or trail runs. They definitely
runs.
They lean into that that culture. It's been impressive to see them do that. And also they have the benefit of, you know, having zero restrictions for e-commerce. They can, you know, self-distro.
They can sell to miners. Maybe that's what it's. Maybe that's who's buying it.
Yeah, I mean, like they can just sell it to any state they want, and they can do it on their own, you know, via UPS, FedEx, whatever they do. And every other brewery struggles with that, either based on their own laws or they just weren't made for that. I mean, if you're talking about, I know Burial does a lot of shipping now, and you're talking about, you know, $40. Plus, you know, shipping fee just to get a case or whatever, a couple six packs. I don't know.
Yeah, and the way that they've done it has just positioned that. I think they were a little ahead of the game. Starting in 2017, I mean, they were way ahead of anything non-alcoholic, in my opinion. I didn't even think about anything non-alcoholic at that point besides, like, what, Heineken Zero might have been out by then.
O'Doul's.
O'Doul's, yeah.
Which is terrible. Sorry, O'Doul's.
But they've done well. And like for, you know, a week or so when I'm like, hey, like I need just focus a little bit, like having fun. But I'd still like to go out to the bar with my friends, but I kind of just want to like have a soda water or something else. This is a great alternative. I feel like I'm super plugging them, but
well,
it
I
is
like
good
them.
To have an
yeah.
alternative.
I like them.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we had Sam Cruz on a few weeks ago and he was like, I think you might have persuaded him a little bit by the end to at least consider it. But he's like, you know, but a lot of breweries, I mean, brewing non-alcoholic beer is hard. It's very difficult to make it.
Requires special equipment.
Yeah, to make it really good.
Yeah.
So being able to outsource that to Athletic and then just being able to have like one option on, you know, that's huge. That's a great business model, honestly.
I will say that Guinness Zero is
Guinness Zero is fine.
Yeah. Whew. Yep. Guinness is good in general. It's it's not underrated. People
it's
love
not
it,
underrated.
But yeah,
it's perfectly rated.
It's perfectly rated.
Just fine. Let's just leave their rating out of this.
It's rated higher on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. Very true. It does taste better on St. Patrick's Day.
You know what's not good though? Smittix.
If you can get it on draft at Irish Rover, it's like better, but
I'm staring at all you beer nerds.
Stuff in the bottles is not, yeah. A lot of times I think those turn into like shelfies too. Like they might be sitting there for quite a while.
I don't mind it.
Hey, they teach their own, man.
Red amber. I'm in the phase of like that amber resurgence is coming. I think we're like completing the circle. Like hazy is a little bit dull and stouts are a little bit dull, and we're coming around to like pilsners, ambers,
Kentucky Commons,
and it's coming around.
I believe we also have some Louisville Brewing scoop, David.
Some scoop, the Satterley scoop,
or Satterley scoop. Let's go.
Yep. Yeah. Happy to announce that our good friends over at Arai Brewing have finally signed paperwork and filed to be a brewery. They are going to occupy the space that was formerly Chimera Brewing and V-Grits. We are extremely sad to see them go and have done collabs with them and been good friends with them all the way through.
Yep.
But they ultimately decided that they were going to move on from that. And there's really good people, Alex and T-Mart, that were ready to pick up that ball and keep it.
And we should say, like, you know, Sean built a beautiful system in there. So
yeah, they're getting a very, very incredible turnkey,
yeah,
like ready to roll brewery out the gate in a wonderful part of the neighborhood of Louisville, on the Barrett Avenue corner. And can't wait to see what they come out with. But I'm happy for them. That I know they've dreamt about this for a long time, so it's good to see anybody that is an entrepreneur like have their dreams come to fruition.
And 100%. It's cool to see too. They're coming from a, you know, they've kind of come up in the Louisville beer scene, so they work at a big Louisville brewery now and whatever. But it kind of reminds me, you know, we talk a lot about how Lexington really benefited from having Alltech there during all that time, just because like, how do you create a craft beer? How do you create a city full of like amazing craft breweries? Well, you have one really good one, and people come and they learn and like
you foster it.
Yeah. Exactly. So
I mean, nearly 12 years later, we're starting to see. I mean, we saw that a little bit with BBC, obviously, but we're starting to see this.
The next generation.
The next generation of folks that were working somewhere previously and they learn under somebody XYZ and then they're starting their own thing. So we're starting to see a little family tree.
Yeah. I mean, look at like Atrium and Shippingport, even like Noble Funk coming from a different place.
Monic
coming from, Scott Scott from Kentucky, and then Buddy from Scott.
And Nick from Gravely was working at Monic.
Yeah, yeah.
Brandon from Ethereal under Scott. I mean, yeah, it's always good to see that growth and evolution, and couldn't be happier for them to be, you know, giving their dream a shot. And
yeah.
Can't wait to stop in.
So Awry Brewing coming soon.
Yeah. Awry Brewing. They're on Instagram.
We'll try to get them on the show for you guys here soon.
Yeah, absolutely. John, what do you got to plug?
Oh man, what do I have to plug? Well, I was listening to an audiobook on the history of the ancient world, and they were talking a lot about like the Sumerians and the inventions of agriculture and stuff like that. So, fermented foods of all kinds. We talk a lot about beer. We like wine. We talk a lot about bourbon, but man, cheese and kombucha and kimchi and sauerkraut. It's good for you. It's incredibly calorically dense, which helps humanity survive if we ever have like a terrible like Last of Us apocalypse or something. Just get a good hunk of cheese and hang on to it. But yeah, try all sorts of fermented foods and make friends with the fermenters.
And they're like the fermented foods were the ones that cut out of the food pyramid. And now they're saying like, you should have it every day.
Yeah.
Like you should have pickles or kimchi or red onion or
There's a really great place in Cincinnati called the Pickled Pig.
Oh, okay.
And it's a sandwich shop, but they also make their own kimchi and their own pickles and their own sauerkrauts and everything. And you can find a lot of their products in town. But just drive up to Cincinnati. It's right off of 71. Super delicious.
That sounds right up my alley.
If you like fermented foods, they're hard to beat.
David, what do you got?
This is near and dear, but I'm going to plug a Drunkwood, local bourbon barrel art producer. Did my house marker a couple of years ago. It started to fade a little bit and I said, hey, I'll order another one. He said, don't order another one. Just take it off the wall, bring it by. I'll sand it and poly it. Be good as new.
So you're saying everybody with Drunkwood products should reach out for a touch up. To reach out to get touched by John King.
Yeah, if anyone wants to touch up from John King, I'm sure it's for sale. But again, customer service goes a long way, and I really
because if there's anything that John King is known for, Drunkwood is customer service.
I thought he was just a social media influencer. I didn't know he made stuff.
I mean, I was gonna buy another one, so I mean, I do appreciate it.
But right there, folks, absolutely, right there.
Adam, what do you got to plug other than the Pickled Pig?
Plug. I didn't even know I was gonna get a plug. That's why I was like, I was like, I'm sneaking in. I think I want to plug one of my speaking of the Pickled Pig, one of my favorite cheese places in this region is a place called Urbanstead Cheese based out of Cincinnati. They have fantastic operation, and their owner, Andrea, is one of the most caring and kind people that I've ever met. When I was trying to figure out what I was doing with myself after leaving my last job, she was super encouraging. I probably didn't listen to any of her advice like I should have, but it goes a long way when people reach out to you and they say, hey, what are you doing? Come up and eat some cheese and let's hang out.
Fuck yeah.
And I super appreciate that. So Urbanstead Cheese, Cincinnati, Ohio. Fantastic stuff.
Is there anything that our listeners can do to support your work or learn more about your cheese endeavors?
Don't support me. No, I have an Instagram, and I'm really bad at updating it. I'm really bad at reaching out to people right now. And that will change eventually. I've just found myself in a really busy spot where I'm working a full-time job that I'm still learning. And I am also working on the side when I have time to do that, and bartending from time to time, and just trying to be a married person in their late 30s.
Yeah.
You know, just the grind. It never stops.
Yeah, you're in good company.
Or is it the rind?
The rind. Oh, rind for days, baby.
The Instagrams is Chubsy Cheese.
Oh, yeah, that's my personal Instagram. It's chubs.e.cheese.
Hell yeah.
Because I am a fun founder of Chuck E. Cheese, as we discovered earlier.
Yeah, yep.
One of the originals. I'm at Steckler's Specialty on Instagram.
Okay.
Excellent.
Hell yeah.
On my end, I'm going to plug both Red Wine and Red Dead Redemption.
There you go. All right.
It goes kind of well together. Cheese and wine go well together.
That's like the cowboy.
It's been out for, you know, I don't know, 7 years now, probably. I rediscovered it. I've been playing over the last week or so, and it's just fun. I mean, I just miss that game so much. And, you know, you know, Wild West Arthur Morgan storyline's really fun, and you can eat cheese in that game too. You can eat cheese in real life. You can drink red wine. You can drink what, you know, it's fun just to do that shit. So,
all right, calm down, more.
It's just fun. You know, I'm just happy. Adam, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you. That was freaking awesome, man. That's might be my favorite cheese ever. Hey,
I'm glad to bring something new.
Yeah. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.